Dong.
Western Texts read by Eastern Therapist with
Anna Hardy
and Nils von Belo.
Yeah, welcome.
Welcome. Hi, good to see you.
Yes, today we're talking about one of my favorite books.
Absolutely.
And it's by Tara Brach and it's called Radical Compassion. Second book will be on the same line by Christopher Germer. And it's called The Mindful Path to Self-Compassion, Freeing Yourself from Destructive Thoughts and Emotions. But we'll start with Tara Brach. Okay, so when I proposed this to you, you were very, very happy about this title.
Oh, yes. I think the wording radical compassion is absolutely something that people really, really need. And it's beautiful as such. I mean, also the way it is presented, especially in the English, publishing. The German publishing is absolutely terrible. Yeah, the German publishing has a terrible title like "Your Fruitful Heart," and it looks like a Rosamunde Pilcher love story book. Yeah, it's really disastrous, I think, the title. But the actual English title, "Radical Compassion," is so wonderful because it is radical, which in a way is. Yeah, in a way, it's aggressive. Being radical can be aggressive, but with the word compassion and self-compassion, it gives us the right and shows us a way how to be self-compassionate in a radical sense. So taking care of our own, which is really, really nice, and something that a lot of patients. I don't know if that's true for you too, but a lot of patients have really difficulties with.
Well, yes, including me. But maybe we should see where she comes from first.
Well, I mean, Tara Brach is an American psychologist. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology and political science. She's a daughter of the 60s because she was born in 1953. And she's actually raised Christian, but she then turned to Buddhist meditation and became a Buddhist, and is a Buddhist teacher, works a lot with meditation. Has found a meditation and yoga center, and teaches and works with mindfulness and the effectivity of mindfulness and meditation on healing, and especially also, I think she has a strong point on eating disorders and stuff like that.
Well, I don't know about eating disorders, mm-hmm. but in her book, she talks about some eating disorders. I want to say that she has been a great help for me during the confinement of the epidemic because she also started online classes. Well, normally she would have the Wednesday night classes and you could watch them afterwards on YouTube. And then she said, I will not only be on online from my home. She's always in the same room. Very nice. And she says, well, you know, I'm alone here. People think I have my team, but no, there's just me. There's the dog and my husband in other part of the house. And she was such a comfort because she talked about all the relevant subjects of this time, you know, election anxiety and the racial problems following the shooting of this black person. And so she commented on all of that from her Buddhist perspective. And then she started having question and answer sessions real time so that she could get in touch with the people and their questions. And then she started doing her method with them. So it was, you know, the people they knew after some time that if I ask a question, she's going to practice with me on the spot, online. And I was surprised how much this works. But she really listened very carefully. And she said, well, I hear this and that. I couldn't hear that. I said, what's this person asking? But she could hear what was the emotion behind it. And so rather than going on an intellectual level, she would ask, okay, so where do you feel that in your body? What's the emotion behind this? And then she didn't try to intellectualize, oh, where does it come from or how can we solve that? She would ask, what does this vulnerable place in you most need? And all the people who were listening to this, they could feel that it was very human, that they also, it resonated with them. You could see that on the reactions in the chat. So yes, I just want to give you an idea of what kind of person she is. She's a very small person, but she has so much energy and so much, so bright eyes and a wide smile. It's really amazing.
And this conveys in this book as well. I think the book is a very wonderful way of how to really look after yourself and how to be compassionate to yourself. One of her biggest thing in this book is her RAIN method. It's a way of releasing the grip of painful emotions, as she said it. So if you're stuck in your painful emotions, if you're stuck in your thought, your circles, stuff like that, she gives you in this book a very clear-cut way of how to deal with it. And her acronym is RAIN, which stands for recognize, for the R, allow, for the A, investigate for the I, and nurture for the N. So these four steps, you can follow these four steps and you will be able to understand and change the way of how you feel your pain and how it dominates you, which is really, I've been giving out this book a lot to patients of mine who are stuck in certain situations or stuck in certain pains, and it really helps them on an everyday level because you can, because of this acronym, this shortcut, you can really practice that in a very, very short time, and it really helps you getting out of this thought processes, this negative.
Yes, and if you're really overwhelmed and you don't know what you most need or what could help, you know, about the nurturing part and the eye maybe also, you can listen to a guided meditation. And she suggests a few phrases like, I'm here with you. Or she also talks about herself, saying that sometimes what she most needs to hear is, I see you and I love you. This is what the most vulnerable place wants. Please love me. And I think she's so open. It's quite simple. And she's not ashamed of really saying that. Because so it's so human.
Yeah, she's just very, very in contact with herself and in contact. And she can give you the idea how you can get there for yourself as well.
What I also love about her is her sense of humor. Uh-huh. In every talk or every lecture, she says something funny.
Well, I had a teacher who said, "Hour of therapy without laughter is a wasted hour of therapy." So I'm like that as well. I love that. I think we need to laugh together to be human. Laughing is to be human. And that's quite interesting, by the way. And that's one of those aspects about Donald Trump, to bring in something mundane. He never was able to laugh about himself. And this disability really, in my point of view, just showed how distant he was from his own self and how he tried to not feel the pain he was in. It's quite amazing. Yeah? And the pain of his inner child. And why he created all this monstrosity around himself, his narcissism, the way how he wanted to be applauded, and that was his only goal. And this applaud was actually this.
That was my mindfulness.
Brilliant. His lack of love for himself and his lack of feeling he didn't want to feel the pain of his inner child.
Yeah,
quite amazing. But coming back to Tara Brach, I think if you look at the book, I think one of those things that I found, I mean, I didn't know this book before either, so you brought it up to us, which I really am thankful for it. And one of those first things that she looks at, that's her starting point, is the idea that we are constantly in our Western world, we're living in a trance. And I really like that idea. It's not a positive trance. It's not the same trance that we've been talking about when feeling pulse, for example, or when we're looking for the listening to the big bell chant, which also can put us into some kind of trance. It's more the trance of being in our functional self. So without recognizing what we're doing, it's this kind of trance that we're functioning in the daily mundane life on a self-sustained kind of emotion, and we're kind of a wheel in the wheel of everyday life without being mindful there, without being there. It's actually really that we sometimes, and I think all of us have this moment sometimes when we realize we're doing something and then we look at it and say, oh, why, what did I just do?
Yeah, she said it's on autopilot.
Autopilot, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And the trance is one still even, well, more painful trance is the trance of unworthiness.
Yes.
So there's this inner judge and you're never happy with yourself. And she even says that, well, it's for me, it's like that also. She never pretends, you know, to be the big guru who has already achieved enlightenment. She really knows about these human pains.
She stayed human.
Yes.
She didn't let her ego run over her, which I really like.
Yeah.
Take over her, which is why her message is so truthful and you can understand it. Hmm? So that's the starting point of her teaching in this book, that we are constantly in that trance, and then she starts to explain her RAIN methods, which is a way of getting out of the trance, out of this circular thinking, out of this constantly being stuck in a theme or constantly being stuck in a painful situation, and coming back to our self, and by recognizing and allowing and investigating and nurturing the aspects that what actually is happening with us. And that's something she also has together with Christopher Germer, which I really, really like. Actually, the trance is, when we're in that trance, we're actually trying to dampen our pains. And what she says is that doesn't help. We have to look at it. So running away from it by trance is not really a way of treating it. It's not a real way of dealing with it. The real way of dealing is it turning around and going straight at it. Go where it's really painful.
Yeah, she said that this is you have to allow it. Like phrases, this belongs, yes, this too, and you sit with it. And she also says that really strong emotions, they calm within 1 or 2 minutes. So then, you know, it's getting better. You don't need the energy to push it down all the time. And this is a very central aspect of a Buddhist psychology. You also find it in the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, that don't lock away your feelings in the cellar, because they will come back, and at some point in your life you will not have the energy to keep all this down, and you could use the energy for to enhance your life.
Well, it's like having a small volcano in yourself, and yes, it's cooking and it's boiling, and it's, you see sort of little lava bubbles popping up, and now and then when you're in a situation, the volcano just takes over. Yeah, the energy takes over. I mean, we probably read about talk about an inner child in another podcast, but it's exactly at that moment when the inner this inner emotion takes over you for a couple of minutes, and then it explodes. Yeah.
Yes, and she also explains her method from the point of view of brain research, mm-hmm. because she said that these very strong emotions from, you know, fight or flight or freeze, they come from the limbic system. And this is what a survival brain tells us to do. It's an immediate reflex. You don't think about it. But then with her RAIN practice and mindfulness practice, you try to go back into the central cortex where you can think about what you're doing. And if you if you give yourself that moment not to react, but to just let the emotion pass by and then react from this higher developed brain, then you get a really chance to move on and to evolve.
And I mean, you said that before, and that's part of her title, being radical, compassionate with yourself. Her last part is always nurture. Mm. So to find out what really nurtures you, to find out what you really need, and to give it to yourself, I think it's a wonderful way. She not only allows you to do this, but she says it's something you have to do, something we all have to do. We all have to nurture ourselves. And is one of those pictures I always like to use with my patients is when you're sitting in an airplane and you get these safety advices, you get this wonderful picture of that if these masks drop down and you have a child with yourself, there is one very important lesson to learn is that the first person you have to put the mask on is yourself, and then you can put it on for the child. Because if you don't do that and you suffocate, your child will suffocate anyway. So looking after oneself, being radical compassionate with our oneself, is the groundwork of looking out for everybody else. And I'm a true believer of this. I believe there's one person that we can look after, and that's ourselves. Yes, we have responsibilities with our children. Yes, for a certain time anyway, because I mean, we give them roots, but we also try to give them wings so that they can fly away. But the one person that we are really in charge is ourselves. And if we are able to be benevolent to ourselves, which is a wonderful world in this aspect, it is truly healing.
But, you know, I also want to stress that this does not say we can all care for ourselves and do not need social contact.
Absolutely, yeah.
And this was very disturbing during the pandemic. There was a young woman on a meditation class, and on the Zoom meeting, she said, you know, I live alone and I really want a partner, but I don't even get the chance to meet someone. So, and she had this feeling of shame. Mm-hmm. Because she didn't have a partner. And this resonated with so many people on this Zoom call. And then so Tara Brach said, yes, that she should sit with that feeling of shame, that something may be wrong with herself because she cannot get a partner. And then also to acknowledge that feeling lonely was part of this. And then she said, imagine that you're getting all the love and attention you're longing for. Just imagine this, get into this feeling. And she didn't say, you know, you can give it to yourself. You really want someone to care for you. And this is okay. You don't have to do it all by yourself and be just like a person on an island. Yes. So I think this is a very important aspect also.
Yes, and this aspect of radical compassion also shows that yes, we have to look out for ourselves, but yes, we are also people who live in a social parameter. We need other people. We want to be in contact with other people, because when we are in contact with other people, we are also in contact with ourselves. And we are born to live in kind of partnership, however you conceive it. Yeah, it can be one-on-one, it can be multi-lovers, it can be a homosexual, it can be heterosexual, whatever you feel like. But living with other people and being in close contact with other people gives us the ability to feel ourselves and to prosper. One and one isn't two, it's three, because it's one, one, and in the middle. So there's always, which is the same as yin and yang. I mean, the yin and yang is an absolutely wonderful sign that it's also shows that we have to live in with other people and that they make us up. But still, even if we live, and that's, I think, that's something that's very often lost, even if we live in a partnership, or if we have children, which we take responsibility for, and especially when they're really small, you have to have a lot of responsibility. It's very important, and that's what I also like about her. It's very important to look at ourselves again. To be sure to be compassionate, self-compassionate for ourselves, and not give up everything that we are for everything else.
She sometimes she tells stories about her son, who's grown up, but when he was a teenager, and she said that she was getting upset because he was sleeping in until noon, and had friends over at night, and they were smoking pot, and so yes, she feels sort of alienated to him. And so she was on a retreat, and she said, "I'm going to look into this." And she didn't blame her son. She really looked deeply, and then she said, "Well, I think it's about my fear of being a bad mother."
Exactly.
So this really shows how living with other people still does not free you from having to look at your own feelings and your own responsibility for certain situations.
It not only doesn't free you, it's always a problem from yourself. If you don't have somebody who is misusing or misguiding you on a normal level, conflicts that exist between people always show something about yourself. And you can always, I think, by using the RAIN method and investigating and nurturing aspects of yourself, you can solve a lot of problems.
Okay, yes. Well, I'm happy that your patients appreciate the book.
Yes, absolutely. It's I think it's a wonderful book, and it's. And we've talked about this because we had a podcast. Sorry, this is only in German because it's a German book called Female Narcissism. The female narcissism aspect has a lot to do with self-love and self-respect. That's one of those aspects she really works on. It's about that although the society doesn't respect women, although the society gives women a strong notion that they can only be loved if they do something, that they have they're not given love freely, but they have to pay for it. She's very, very, although there's not a female or gender aspect in this book, she has a very, very strong aspect of you can give your compassion. You can work on yourself. You can not work, but you can love yourself. And the way she does this, the way she teaches you how to nurture yourself, is absolutely a turnaround for a lot of people in my practice.
Nice.
Yes, absolutely nice. So we highly recommend that book. We highly recommend it for therapists and for patients.
Yes, also as a burnout prophylaxis for therapists.
Oh, yes. Great.
Okay, so the second book, I already mentioned it. It's Christopher Germer or German. I'm not sure how to pronounce him. He's a PhD and a clinical psychologist in private practice in the Boston area. He's a clinical instructor in psychology at Harvard Medical School and founding member of the Institute for Meditation and Psychotherapy. He works together with Christine Neff and also with brain researcher Richard Davidson.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he's more on the research side of mindfulness. He does a lot of clinical studies together with Richard Davidson, who is a sort of senior scientist or pioneer in exploring what really happens in the brain. He's looking at the brain in fMRI scans. And this is what also distinguishes this book, because he has these little sections where they're gray sort of info boxes. And then he explains clinical studies.
For me, especially in the comparing and the teaming up with Tara Brach, it's quite interesting that Christopher Germer actually, in a way, is a very male kind of has a very male kind of approach to this whole aspect with lots of technical aspects and very scientific aspects in it. And Tara Brach has this much more emotional internal aspect, although he has this as well. So I don't want to take that away from Christopher Germer, but in a way it really shows this different approaches, which is great, because I think if you have patients, male patients, sometimes it's much more interesting to give them an approach from a more male perspective, because this kind of language may touch them more than the more emotional aspect that Tara Brach conveys, which I really love, but some men might not really hook into that much and that easily.
Yeah, so, you know, his central teaching in this book is on a Buddhist practice also. Mm-hmm. It's called the Metta Meditation. And he teaches how to do this in steps. First of all, you need mindfulness to be able to practice it. So there's, I would say, half of the book maybe on mindfulness practices. And then this Metta Meditation is also a four-step approach. And it consists of three sentences, or four sentences. May I be safe? May I be happy? May I be healthy? And may I live with ease? And you start practicing that for yourself. Some patients cannot do this because they are so disconnected and feel so unworthy that they cannot do that. So he recommends to do this for a benefactor. Mm-hmm. Someone who really, and if you cannot find someone who's a really positive a relationship for you, then you could use a pet, your dog, your cat, something that doesn't have a problematic aspect. And then when you do that, you can choose a close person that maybe has some difficult aspects in the relationship, and then when you are comfortable with that, you choose a neutral person. He says it's the Indian person in the grocery shop where he shops, and you remind yourself of the common humanity, and you start of feeling a goodwill towards this person. And then you see that the relation changes, because, you know, maybe 80% of the people I know, they're neutral for me, because I don't really know, but I meet them in the street. They're passers-by, people on the train. So, yes, sometimes I really, when I go through the streets, I open my heart and I say, may you all be happy, may you be safe. Yeah, you know, I really like to practice that. When I'm riding my bike to go from home to the practice, I see people and say, wow. You know, sometimes I even imagine I come from Mars, mm-hmm, back to Earth, and I'm so happy to see fellow humans.
Sometimes when I'm not riding my bike, I simply cannot say, may you be happy, especially when the car is trying to cut me or something.
Yes, and the last step is you say it for a difficult person where you're in conflict with. Mm-hmm. When this gets too strong and you don't start with the most difficult relationship, then you also have to stop, interrupt, and go back to your own well-being and care for yourself. So it has a lot of aspects also from the self-compassion practice taught by Tara Brach.
Well, that's his main base, isn't it? Self-compassion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's similar to the radical compassion aspect of Tara. He's a very works and focuses on the cultivation of self-compassion, which again brings us back to this aspect of that we all tend to criticize ourselves. The inner critic is a very hardworking member of our board in our head. Yeah, I mean, whatever kind of sex you give him or her has quite the tendency of giving us a hard time. I mean. And his cultivation of self-compassion and the exercise to the opportunity to explore and learn about one's ability of self-compassion is a very core aspect of his teaching.
Yes, and I also have incorporated that into my clinical practice. So I like to be there before the patients come, mm-hmm. like quarter of an hour. And I have a postcard of Bodhisattva Guanyin, mm-hmm. which is the Bodhisattva of compassion, you know, symbolized by the water she pours on the thirsty living beings. And I stand there and I say, may I be safe. And I really feel that I calm down. I feel that I don't have to be over responsible, you know, that I just feel at ease that the things are going to evolve, unfold how it should be, like mm-hmm. in Desiderata, mm-hmm. life will unfold. Mm-hmm. So I have this confidence. Yeah, it gives me confidence when I start that way. And then I think of all the patients I'm going to meet that day, and I say this metta meditation for them too.
Well, for me, it's also the way I decorated my clinic. It's actually the decoration of my clinic has very strong aspect of self-compassionate, because I have pictures and of, for example, right across from my desk where I always look, this is a wonderful picture of the Lake of Garda where we always go to having holidays. So, and in my cupboard, I have statues of the Buddha and Darth Vader and Superman and
in one breath you mentioned the Buddha,
breath, yes.
And Darth Vader
and that's a different aspect of my life, and the Hulkbuster from Iron Man, and I have the Phoenix from Harry Potter. So I have very symbolic aspects, but they also represent me in a way, and in a way they calm me down and bring me to this place, because this is my home, this is my home base, this clinic is where I am at home and where I'm rooted. So coming into my clinic instantly makes me come here and being myself. Yeah, Buddha and Darth Vader, they're quite an interesting pair there in my cupboard.
Above your head I see the rocket from Tim und Struppi.
Exactly, yeah. Tim und Struppi from Tintin. That's actually, I think it's the most beautiful rocket ever built. I don't think it would be working, but it's, for me, the rocket shows the, that's how a rocket should look. Yeah, so it's, and in a way, one of my dreams always was to go out into space. I think experiencing weightlessness would be one of my absolute dreams. I don't think I can do it in my lifetime, but that's okay.
And do you think it's also a fantasy when it's too hard in the clinic that you just want to space out?
No, it's more about, for me, the rocket symbolizes more something about the beauty of our planet, and therefore we as people are actually just a small grain in the universe. We're just a very, very small part. And although the universe is expanding as it should, as Desiderata or Paul Ehrman says it, it always shows me the, on the one side, the humble part of human beings, that we're a small grain, but also that we have the big possibility to go out there, and that we are a big possibility to move on, which I think in a practice is very important, that people have the feeling, yeah, they're in charge, they can go on. So it's part of the self-compassionate of being able to be in charge, and it's self-empowerment, which I'm really a really strong put a strong emphasis in my practice.
But on the other side, you don't have to try too hard. I remember a case history by Christopher Germer of a patient. I think he was in informatics, and he was doing this practice on a very technical level, and he's found some improvement. He was getting more inner peace, he wasn't as nervous as before, but he still expected that, you know, like going to the gym and training your muscles, that you must see a result. And yes, it's also about training your mind, but he was trying too hard. So he said, you know, adjust. I don't know really what was his advice, but It's also an aspect. Don't try too hard.
Don't be too metally, as we Chinese say.
Yeah. Mm.
So here's another way of dealing with your self-compassion, another way of healing yourself. In his last part of his book, he has lots of very good things you can do yourself. Little workouts, mental workouts, etc., where you can work on yourself, which I really like.
You can also get these guided meditations from his website. They're free.
So him and Tara Brach, coming from different aspects and coming from different backgrounds, in a way, both very strongly give ideas and help to reach your inner core and to be nice to yourself.
Mm. What I want to mention is that I said in the beginning, he works with Christine Neff, mm-hmm. and she's also a psychologist. And she has written a second book, I think it's on the yang side of self-compassion, because most people say, well, you know, this is about being soft and peaceful and getting overridden by other more aggressive people. And she teaches this method to show that when you use the yang side of compassion, you can also deal with outer problems or even with addictions and or bad habits. And I find this very interesting as a woman that she is more, you know, cultivating the yang side of compassion.
Well, I haven't read that one yet, so
yeah,
we'll talk about that in a later.
Yes, we will do that. But I just wanted to say that maybe it could be misunderstood that the self-compassion practice is something of being soft, and well, it is about being soft, but it doesn't mean that, well, you know, you're going to be overridden by other people.
Not at all. The opposite is, I think, the case. I mean, the more you are aware of yourself, the more you're compassionate to yourself, the more you have the possibility to direct your energies to the outside and to be able to move stuff. I'm totally with you. I think it's a total wrong idea that that people are self-compassionate will not be able to move stuff. But in a compassionate thing, I mean, that's what Tara Brach also very strongly recommends. How can you be compassionate with yourself, with others, if you're not compassionate with yourself? I mean, one of the central teachings, Christian teaching, is love thy neighbor as yourself, as thyself. So I think what we in the Western world very often misunderstand is that the second part is the most important part.
Yes, because you're thought to be an egoist if you do that.
Exactly. So that's a total misunderstanding. It's not about egoism. Yeah? The narcissism is egoistic. It's not about egoism. It's about being in love and being respectful to yourself and making sure that you're well. And if you love thyself, you can love other people as well.
So that's a very nice last sentence.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you too.
Western Texts read by Eastern Therapist with
Anna Hardy
und Nils von Below.